This is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Marquise Munson. And in case you did, if you did not miss our announcement earlier in the show, I would recommend going and checking that out. Of course, if you miss any of the show, we have moved all of our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Search Morning Drive in Apple or Spotify or log on to thegamenational.com to find our daily audio. Rate, review, subscribe today. If you're wondering where Nick Cale is, he is no longer with Morning Drive. Management has decided to go in a different direction, and we explained a little bit further earlier in the show, so I would recommend going and checking out the first segment of the program. So if you want to go do that, please check it out. Today is a Tuesday, however, and we are retiring Derek Mason screaming at you that it is a top four Tuesday. Is that correct? Are we retiring that?
Yeah,
or do you feel the urge to scream right now?
It's all hiatus.
It's
load
on vacation.
Hiatus. Load
it's on
management.
Vacation. Yeah, load management's load on management. Vacation. It's on vacation right now. you're just going to get...
just like regular analysis?
Just regular. You know, top four Tuesday. And,
oh, okay.
Is there
There's
any,
one right there.
I wonder, is there any surprises from any one of you? Because now, Munson, you have to give us your top four.
Yeah, Munson.
You got to take the place of Nick Cale, so you got to give us your top four. So is there any surprise? I want to know, is there any surprises? That's first and foremost. Is there any surprises?
I don't – tonight on the rankings, no. I don't think that there are any surprises in the top four. I think we entered the weekend LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, and Georgia. I can't see why, you know, Clemson dominates in a huge win over Wake Forest, team that has seven wins. Ohio State just destroys Rutgers. Okay, who cares? LSU rolls big over Ole Miss, although they gave up almost 40 points. Still, I don't think there's a problem. Georgia goes on the road and beats Auburn. So, if anything, all these teams sort of built on their resumes, with the exception of maybe Ohio State because Rutgers is so bad. But in the meantime, Alabama lost their best player.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you thought there was a chance that Alabama was going to maybe somehow work its way back into the top four, I just don't see how, you know, even I, who's someone who with Tua believes Alabama is one of the four best teams, without Tua, I can't make that case. And so it's just very simple. They are not as good without their best player. It's just not that complicated. And so I think Alabama's not going to make it in there. They weren't in there last week. I don't see why they'd be in there this week. So, I mean, my top four is LSU 1. I have Clemson 2.
Okay.
Ohio State 3 and Georgia 4. My only argument for Clemson is just I think they are overlooked in general. It's not a knock on Ohio State. I think all these teams are great. Mm-hmm. I just lean towards Clemson. Literally, their quarterback has never lost a game. He's literally never lost a game. And now he's got the second longest interceptionless streak in college football. I think over 115 passes without an interception. Mm-hmm. They're winning by 35, 40 points every week. I acknowledge that the schedule is not overly spectacular. I get that. But you just beat a 7-win Wake Forest team. You know, Louisville's 6-4. You beat them by 35 on the road. You're crushing people. So I haven't dropped Clemson. I still have Clemson in the top two. Ohio State's been very good. They deserve to be. You could make a case for all these teams at number one. Georgia's the only one you can't really make a case for at number one because of the loss. But other than that, I don't know about you guys where your top fours would be, but I expect the committee to keep it pretty stock tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go LSU 1, obviously. I'll go Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, and Georgia 4. And if I were to give a 5 and a 6, it would probably end up going to Oregon and Alabama, but it's just now I have a matter of which one's 5 and which one's 6.
I got Bama at 5.
And I'll probably put Oregon at 6, but I just think, and it's weird because we see how Auburn's performing now, and you know they're getting close with teams. I'm talking about they lost a touchdown game to LSU and Georgia, and it seems like we're kind of faulting Oregon for losing that game to Auburn in the beginning of the season,
I think they're helped by it.
Yeah, but even though it was a close loss, but people still look at the one loss. I don't think that matters. They just look at the one loss.
But I think the reason that Oregon is ahead of all the other one-loss teams outside of Georgia, like comparing them to Utah, which is a great debate, comparing them to Oklahoma, which is a great debate, Penn State, Minnesota, Baylor, all these one-loss teams, I think the reason they're viewed ahead of all of those teams, with the exception of Bama, is because their loss is to a very good Auburn team on a neutral field by a close margin. Bo Nix had to throw a touchdown pass with like 20 seconds to go to win the game. Otherwise, Oregon's undefeated and sitting there at number four.
But what I mean is the narrative of, you know, Alabama has to win convincingly against Auburn in order for them to kind of make their case. But I don't see that happening, especially with Mac. But I look at it as Oregon had that game in control, lost it in the last series of the game. And so I think even if Oregon were to win out and win the Pac-12 and beat a Utah team that is pretty good, the only loss is against USC, and this is a USC team that can possibly get 8 wins this season. So if they beat Utah, then all of a sudden, even if Alabama does beat an Auburn team convincingly, I'll still have to give the nod to Oregon.
Well, it's funny, and I wonder about the dynamic, because if Alabama crushes on the road Auburn, how would you not put them ahead of Oregon if Oregon played Auburn too and lost? Mm-hmm. Like, it's an interesting dynamic to consider. You know, if Oregon is a 12-1 Pac-12 champ sitting there, and the two teams we're discussing for that final spot are Alabama and Oregon, and Alabama has a win on the road against Auburn, and Oregon played Auburn and lost, that's a common opponent. It shouldn't be the end-all, be-all. Mm-hmm. But, again, I think this is decided for us now because Tua's not playing. If Tua was in there, which, again, is the reason I wouldn't have started him, if Tua was in there and they smoke Auburn, I could sit there very comfortably and say, I think Alabama's the better team. But without Tua, it's hard to make the argument for Alabama.
Yeah, it is, and I think it makes the committee's job a little bit easier not to, even if Alabama beats Auburn, I think it makes their job easier to not put Alabama as one of the top four teams. Now, if Tua's playing, then they still have an argument, and it would be hard for them. They would be hard-pressed not to put Alabama as one of the top four teams. Here's my top four. And to me, it really, once you're in because there's no home field advantage, so to speak, in the playoffs. I got Ohio State one. Y'all know how much I love LSU, but
is
I got Ohio State
LSU's
one.
Defense that you're concerned about?
Yeah, it's just LSU's defense. I got LSU two, Clemson three.
Nothing wrong with that.
Georgia four. It's just, I still think LSU will beat everybody. I think at this rate, I don't know if anybody could beat them, even in a national championship game. But if there's any, if there's any Achilles heel, it's their defense. I think Ohio State has proven, obviously, when they get their best player back on defense, arguably might be the best player on the team.
Possibly the best defensive player in the country.
Exactly. So
Chase Young, by the
way. Chase Young, people. So once he comes back, this is a defense that is giving up, on average, maybe 12, 13 points a game throughout the season, somewhere around there. And their offense is averaging over 40 points a game. Justin Fields looks, if he's not going to be the Heisman, which I don't think he will, he might end up being second. Chase Young is the best defensive player in the country, might be the number one pick in the draft. This team, the only Achilles heel for Ohio State might be the coach, Day. But if I'm picking right now, at this point in time, it doesn't mean next week it won't be different, because they've got Penn State and Michigan to round out their season. But right now, because of their defense, I'm picking Ohio State 1, LSU 2, Clemson 3, Georgia 4. Now, 5, I got Oklahoma. I'm counting that win last week,
the way they came back.
Do we think the committee looks at that game as a positive, because they made a huge, furious comeback, the largest in school history, 25 points down, and their defense gave up 0 points. That's right, folks. An Oklahoma defense gave up 0 points in the second half. Mm-hmm. Or does the committee look at that game and say, why were you so flat? Why did you almost lose to Iowa State? Why did you lose to Kansas State? And why were you so flat in the first half and down 28-3? I don't know. I honestly, that's one of those things that I can't wait to see tonight, because I don't know what the committee's going to do with Oklahoma.
Exactly. I'm just, because they were in Waco.
Undefeated Baylor team on the road.
Undefeated Baylor team on the road. Baylor's a good team, and they held them to 0 points in the second half and made the biggest comeback in Oklahoma school history to win that ball game. I'm counting that as a plus for me when ranking Oklahoma. I think they were too low in the rankings anyway. So I'm putting them at 5 right now. I've got Alabama at 6.
I've got Oklahoma ahead of the Pac-12 teams, like you do. I think the Pac-12 teams are good, but there are zero top 25 wins combined for Oregon and Utah right now. Mm-hmm. They don't have a single top 25 win between the two of them. I'm not saying that they aren't good teams. They are. But if you're going to rip on Alabama's resume and rip on their schedule and say, who have they played, who have they beaten, who's Oregon and Utah beaten that is of high quality note? I mean, listen, I think beating Washington State and Washington and Arizona State, those are good teams. Those are good wins, but they're not elite wins. And so, again, if you're going to rip on Bama's schedule, then you got to be honest and fair and look at some of these other teams' schedules and say, well, what's Oregon's best win? On the road against Washington? Probably on the road against USC. They smoked them in the Coliseum.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. It just all depends on if you want to compare and contrast USC and Texas A&M, which obviously Texas A&M is Alabama's biggest win.
Texas A&M
is far way better than USC. So if that's how you want to determine it. But I don't know. I want to know just how much they're going to value this Pac-12 one loss, conference championship, because then that's going to be the key.
We won't know that until the end
of what, how they're going to determine everything.
Well, if you look at Oklahoma, Oklahoma has a chance to really make an argument on being that fourth team moving forward, especially if Georgia loses in the SEC championship game to, we assume, is going to be LSU, because they end the season, TCU. They're playing pretty good.
It's an okay team.
Exactly.
It's not a bad team.
But then they finish off with Oklahoma State. And
who's
ranking if they stay ranked? And then they would have to play potentially a Baylor team again.
Yeah.
So you're talking their last four games they're playing three
top 20 teams.
So if they can win all three of those games, I think they do have a legitimate reason if Georgia loses.
Same equation. If Georgia loses, the Pac-12 champion also has a good case because they will have added a win over a top 7 team.
Yeah.
Right? So like they're going to build their resume too. I think it does come down to the Big 12 champ and the Pac-12 champ getting in if Georgia loses. Mm-hmm. If Georgia wins, then they're both in with Clemson and Ohio State.
Exactly.
And that's it. And frankly, I think everybody would be okay with that. I do think the difference is if Georgia loses that game, they're done. Who takes that four spot? I'm with you. I would vote Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the committee will do that. I think they would give it to the Pac-12 team. I think because Utah defensively and Oregon defensively are so much better than Oklahoma, and Utah has been so dominant. If Utah wins, I would not be surprised if the Pac-12 champ gets in. That's my prediction. It's not what I would do. I think Oklahoma's better. I would take Jalen Hurts in that Oklahoma offense in a one-game scenario. But I think the Pac-12 champ is going to have a really good chance to get in.
Remember, people, they didn't have their best offensive weapon, CeeDee Lamb, last game.
That's true.
So, you could count that.
Still won,
And still won. So you could count that for them. When you didn't have arguably your best offensive weapon.
Yep, totally agree. All of this conversation, though, leads to one giant basic point, and that is all you expansionists out there need to shut it down, all right? And I'll explain when we come back. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
All right, good folks. As I tell you each and every day, just about, my men listeners, that's who I'm talking to. No knock on the women listeners. We love you. We want you to listen more because we think you listen intently. You're better listeners. No knock on my men, but we just don't listen as well. But right here, I'm talking to my men listeners. I know you're out there, and I've been telling you this for a while now about my good folks at Cool Springs MD. More men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances, and Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and his wife Daphne, along with that experienced staff, give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. Cool Springs MD services have already helped many men of Brentwood, Nashville, Franklin, which I'm in, and the surrounding areas in Tennessee with improving their immune systems, energy levels, cognitive functions, and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And who doesn't want a healthier life and lifestyle? And to achieve that, you got to go see the good folks at Cool Springs MD. And how do you go see them? Well, you got to make an appointment, man. That's what we got to do. It's a cause and an effect. You know, there's something going on in you. You know, you got to call Cool Springs MD. And they will effectively get you back right. Feeling like that 25-year-old again. I know I did. I was tired. Went to Cool Springs MD. And voila. I'm back to my old self. And this is how you can do it. here's the number. Write it down, men. Or if your wife's with you, have her write it down and put it in her smartphone. Here's the number, 615-486-3458. 615-486-3458. Because not only do it help you men, it will help the wife as well. If you can't call them right now and you're at your computer, go to the website, coolspringsmd.com.
Preds fans, don't miss this Wednesday night Smashville Live featuring Nashville Predators Mikael Granlund and UC Saros. We will be in Cool Springs at Brewhouse South, and the show starts at 7 p.m. Fans can also win tickets to an upcoming Preds game. A limited number of autographs or pictures will be available, so be sure to get there early. This Wednesday night Smashville Live is brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company, and Red Spirits and Wine. Preds, of course, back on the ice tonight against Winnipeg. Huge game for them as defensively, they've got some issues right now. It might be goaltending. We'll get into that coming up in a few minutes, in just a few minutes. So stick with us here. Morning Drive, Derek Mason and Braden Gall. And listen, everybody wants expansion. Everybody wants automatic bids into the playoff. I think we're going to get there eventually. You guys know how I feel about it. I don't want to see it. I know, Derek, you don't want to see it. Mm-hmm. But it's going to happen because of money probably at some point. But for those that really want it because it's the best way to determine a champion, not because you have some financially vested interest like all these athletic directors and corporate sponsors and TV partners do, forget all of that. Just as a fan of college football, if you think what's best for college football is to expand to 8 teams, that's fine. Let me make the counter argument for you and see what you think. Because right now, we are on schedule to have number 1 versus 4 in the SEC championship game. Georgia versus LSU.
Mm-hmm.
We're on schedule to have number probably 2 versus number 10 or 9. You know, Penn State and Ohio State are going to play this week. And then Ohio State could play either Wisconsin or Minnesota, probably Minnesota, whose number going to be what, probably 12 or something tonight in the Big Ten title game.
Mm-hmm.
Clemson, okay, in the ACC championship game is going to play Virginia probably. Okay. Maybe Virginia gives them a game, but it's not going to be a marquee matchup. And in the Pac-12, you've got right now 6 versus 7. And in the Big 12, you could have Baylor versus Oklahoma, both with one loss, both ranked in the top 10. You catch what I'm laying down here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is that every single championship game is a playoff game. We have another round of the playoffs. It's called Championship Saturday. How great is that day going to be? Just let your mind drift to that day where you have Oregon versus Utah with one loss each in the Pac-12, where you have Georgia and LSU, where you have Ohio State versus Minnesota, you have Baylor versus Oklahoma, both with one loss, both ranked in the top 10. Just let your mind drift to that day.
Mm-hmm.
How good would that day be? And then let your mind drift to an 18 playoff and how meaningless that day might be. If they expand, you're ruining the regular season. I understand that you're adding extra games to the playoff, and it's fun, and that's good football to watch. But we already get that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Championship Saturday is going to be spectacular. I think it is going to be the best Championship Saturday we have had ever.
I mean, this is what, and we've talked about this before. I think conferences, well, sports or whatnot, that basically everybody makes it in the end. I don't think it's not as good when you look at the league and half the teams make it. I don't think that's great, but it is what it is. I think basketball is cool because, you know, everyone loves March Madness and, you know, everybody's eliminating just about everybody, and everybody, and people love that.
But think about March Madness, because you always talk about percentages, mm-hmm. which you just were doing. They're 355, whatever it is, mm-hmm. D1 basketball programs. There's 70 or 8. If you count the Big East, there's uh-huh. 90 power five, you know, call it whatever you want to call it, big, mm-hmm. big power programs. And only like 40 of them get in, 65 total, 68 total,
so that's
whatever.
You're still only talking like a fifth or a sixth
of the teams.
Exactly. So even that's why I think basketball, you know, college basketball has gotten it right. I think the NCAA, college football, has it right with saying, you know what, we're not, at this point, we're not opening it up to everybody. Just because you're a conference champion doesn't mean you're going to win. You're going to get into the playoffs. you don't want to have a scenario where a two-loss or three-loss conference champion get in just because they won the conference. So they're automatically in. I love the way it's working out now, because the last 3 weeks of college football,
it's awesome,
is probably most exciting of any sport, because it's a 4-week playoff.
We just went LSU Bama.
Exactly.
Then we had Oklahoma Baylor. This week we're going to go Penn State Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
The week after that we're going to have
Ohio State Michigan.
Auburn Alabama. And then, you know, then the champion, and that's before we even get to the championship weekend.
So these last 4 weeks are playoffs. The last 4 weeks are these eight teams that y'all screaming about. They are in a playoff scenario.
Yeah. And
that's what you want.
Those games are going to be epic. My brain tells me, experience tells me that some of these teams are going to lose. There's going to be upsets along the way. And now I've sort of got to the point where we're so close to the end, I don't want to see upsets until the end.
Uh-huh.
Because I want to see 6-7 in the Pac-12 title game. I want to see 1-4 in the SEC championship game. I want to see, you know, if Minnesota gets to the championship game and Ohio State gets there, you're probably talking 2-9.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. You know, Baylor and Oklahoma both get to the Big 12 title game with one loss. You're talking, again, 7-9 or 6-8 or something. Yeah, I mean, two top 10 teams. And so we could have 4 championship games that feature 2 top 10 teams.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you want out of a bracket? Exactly.
That is your 18 playoff right there. That is your 18 playoffs headed into the playoffs. So to me, that's what you want. You don't want at the end, you know, the last, say, week or two not to mean as much. It'll still mean something,
right,
but it won't mean as much, because the anticipation won't be as high, because these teams figure, you know, if we're in, only thing we got to do is win our game. We're in, because
yep,
there's 8 of us, so we're in. Even if we might lose, but we're still in, because there's 8 of us.
Just show up and not suck.
Yeah, exactly. Show up and not look bad, and
right,
we're still in. I don't want that.
Right.
I want them to have to go in and know that if they lose, they're done.
Like even in the 4-team situation right now, LSU probably doesn't have to win that game against Georgia.
Exactly.
So really, but it's already almost not that important for LSU.
But it's just for that one team, or maybe 2 teams, Clemson and LSU.
Right.
Even with Clemson, if they lose, I think, I'm not saying they will be left out, but I think people would think hard because of their conference and it not being as strong. And people say they shouldn't have lost that game.
Yeah. What if they lose to South Carolina and then beat Virginia and win the ACC title? I still think I would put them in, especially since Georgia would have lost to the exact same team.
Uh-huh.
Now, Georgia has better wins, but I agree. Like, for one team, Championship Saturday could be not worth anything this year.
I think the only team...
But it's incredibly important for 9 or 10 other teams. We're going to have a great final month, man.
I think the only team it doesn't mean, if they continue to win throughout the regular season, the only team that I believe that's 100% in, if they just win the remainder of their games, is LSU.
Yeah.
That's the only team that I think is in, no matter what. If they win the next 2 games... No matter what happens in the SEC championship game.
Meaning if they lose, they're still in.
Yeah. If they lose the SEC championship game, I think they're still in.
Yeah, they'd have the best loss in the country probably.
Exactly.
I mean, LSU's basically earned their way in as long as they finish the regular season 12-0 and they head to Atlanta with 12-0. But again, for those that are wanting expansion, I would say, you know, listen, we thought this season was going to be all Alabama-Clemson again, right? We thought this whole thing was going to be part 5, Alabama-Clemson. Oh, does college football have an Alabama-Clemson problem? Like, that was what we talked about. Now we have 12 teams.
Exactly.
That are all vying for 4 spots with 3 weeks to play. That's as good as it gets. That's as good a sport, that's as good a season as I can remember in college football. I cannot remember a November like we're going to have. And it's already been epic, and it's going to continue to be epic. And that's why it doesn't need to be expanded on.
No.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it. All right. When we come back, an update on Tua Tagovailoa. Nick Saban had some comments on why his star quarterback was out on the field. We'll do that when we come back. Morning Drive. When it comes to your internet, good enough doesn't cut it. Good enough doesn't cut it. I'll get that right. Xfinity Internet's better because it streams better. Yeah, you heard that right. Xfinity Internet's better because it streams better. Introducing Xfinity Flex, a personalized stream dashboard that puts all of your favorites in one place so they're not scattered across a bunch of apps. It's searchable with your voice, and all you got to do is say play romantic comedies, and it plays romantic comedies. Plus, it has over 10,000 free shows and movies. Search less and watch more with the voice-controlled streaming device that's made for you. It's not just easy, it's effortless. And now, it's included with Xfinity Internet for no additional cost. That's simple, easy, and awesome. Get Xfinity Internet for $20 a month for 12 months with a one-year agreement and add Flex 4K streaming device for no additional cost. It's two amazing services for the price of one. Go to Xfinity.com/flex. Xfinity.com/flex. Call 1-800-XFINITY or visit an Xfinity store today. Offer ends 1-7-20. Restrictions apply. New performance starter internet customers only. Equipment taxes and fees extra and subject to change. After term, regular rates apply. An update on Tua when we come back. Morning Drive, Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Marquise Munson. Top 4 Tuesday, of course. Preds back on the ice tonight. We'll get to that coming up in just a few minutes. However, this was Nick Saban. I believe this was yesterday. Is that correct, Marquise? Kind of, I guess, just going into further detail about the decision surrounding Tua Tagovailoa. Of course, if you've lived under a rock for the last 3 days, he is out for the season. Will not play for Alabama. I think it cost them a trip to the playoffs because with Tua, they are, shockingly, a better football team than without him. I know that's really difficult math to understand, but it's pretty basic. So this was Nick Saban with some further commentary about his injured quarterback.
I don't know. I think as coaches, you know, the guy was healthy. He didn't have a problem with his ankle. Certainly didn't look like he had a problem with his ankle, which would have been the only reason not to play him in the game. You know, it's an SEC game. You know, typically you play the best players on your team at every position. So why wouldn't we play him? If I knew he was going to get hurt, I wouldn't have played him. If I knew any player was going to get hurt, I'd have taken Raekwon out. I'd have taken Ruggs out. I'd have taken them all out. But unfortunately, we don't have that kind of hindsight. So, you know, I'm not second-guessing the fact that we played him. What if we wouldn't have played him and not won the game? I mean, how can you assume that you would win a game by not playing your best players? I've never, ever done that. And don't intend to do it in the future, because that's the only way you can be fair to players, and that's the only way that you can be fair to the team. And Tua absolutely wanted to play in the game, did everything he could to play in the game, to get ready to play in the game, and he's our number one quarterback. So I don't know. I mean, if Aaron Rodgers was able to play in the game, would they not play him in a game? I don't really know. I don't know how else to do it.
Well, Nick, let me answer that for you. If it was a meaningless game and they, at the end, because we've seen.
You mean like a preseason game?
Yeah,
maybe.
Or the end of the season when you know you've made the playoffs.
Or maybe Western Carolina, perhaps,
exactly.
This week for
they
Alabama.
They have, NFL teams have taken their quarterback out.
Uh-huh.
They have not played them.
Peyton used to play one snap.
Exactly.
In week 17.
Hand it off and then go sit on the bench.
Right.
I think. And
he's fully healthy.
Yeah, I think where he lost people, and maybe it was because of the halftime, is the whole two-minute thing.
Yeah, that's true.
That's where he lost people, is that we wanted him to get him reps, practice reps. Okay, Nick, you're saying, what you're essentially saying is, because you're talking out of both ends of your mouth, both sides of your mouth. You said that what if we would have lost the game? But then you said that practicing 2 minutes. When I practice, I'm not worried about the guys. You see what I'm saying? I'm not worried about the guys across from me. To me, it's practice.
If that's your line,
exactly.
If that's your line, like, hey, I wanted to get to us some reps in the 2 minute drill because
practice.
Live
we wanted
bullets.
To practice.
It's 35-7.
Exactly. We wanted to practice. So you weren't worried about Mississippi State.
Yeah,
you had no, you didn't think Nick. You
he's not allowed to say that though.
You're not allowed to say. But even though he did say at halftime when he said practice, that was saying that Mississippi State we knew we were going to beat him, so we were just trying to practice some 2 minute out there, do some things maybe that we didn't do that we wanted to try out. So because they're not that good, so we wanted to try it out on them. Nick Saban, Tua Tagovailoa has practiced 2 minute. Basically the last 2 years. As Nick Kale said, their whole offense is 2 minutes.
Yep.
Okay? That's basically what it is. So why then do I have to practice 2 minutes? That's why he lost me. The whole 2 minute deal. He's right. You know, you didn't know if Tua was going to get hurt. You were already up Take them out. There's no need to. To me, there's no need to practice 2 minutes because their offense is 2 minutes.
And it's why I wanted to yesterday attempt to get some explanation from our good buddy and friend of the show, Aaron Suttles, about why maybe that decision was made to start him. Because we said on Friday that we didn't think Tua was going to play or that should play. Mm-hmm. He clearly was hobbled at the end of the LSU game. He clearly has an issue where as the game went along against the LSU Tigers, he got more injured, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's one of those things. And I don't care how good a week of practice you have. The number one priority for Alabama is to get into the playoff. And the way you get into the playoff is having a healthy Tua Tagovailoa beat Auburn. Mm-hmm. That is the number one way you get into the playoff. So, again, I said it on Friday.
Yeah.
I thought you should not play Tua. I don't think you should start before the injury. Now, again, I understand the hindsight argument mm-hmm. that, oh, now he's injured, now it's easy to say that you shouldn't have played him. Now, for those of us, yourself and myself included, if you listened to this show on Friday, you heard us say Tua shouldn't be on the field. You mm-hmm. don't need him to beat Mississippi State, your whatever 29, 30-point favorite, whatever it was. You're going to win the game. There's the risk-reward factor. I don't know what – I guess maybe the reward is that you beat Mississippi State by 50 and the committee likes that. Why is a win over Mississippi State going to get you into the playoff or not? It's not.
Yeah.
It's the eighth or ninth most important bullet point on your resume. So to me, there was nothing to really be gained mm-hmm. from playing Tua in either the Mississippi State game or the Western Carolina game, which is basically a practice.
Mm-hmm.
No one would have a problem with him sitting out the Western Carolina game. Again, you have cost yourself a trip to the playoff. I'm not placing blame the way Aaron, Suttles yesterday kind of accused us of doing. And by the way, if you missed any part of the show, including a very heated interview with Aaron mm-hmm. Suttles yesterday, we have moved our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Search Morning Drive in Apple or Spotify. Or log on to thegamenashville.com and find our daily audio. Rate, review, and subscribe. And go listen to some interviews. And
yeah,
stuff. There's nothing to be gained and everything to be lost.
Nothing to be gained with playing Tua. There's been other scenarios at the beginning of the season where Tua's, only played a half or whatever the case may be. I just didn't think you just had lost to LSU. And here's another thing. Another line of thinking that I don't think people really they've went down this road, or maybe they're scared to go down this road. In order for Tua, because I know how these high ankle sprains work, they don't just get healthy, and he had to have surgery too. They don't just get healthy in 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, they do this weird new thing where they put the wire between the two bones and bring it back together.
Yeah, that's why when you have a high ankle sprain, they tape your ankle as if you're in a cast to kind of keep it tight. But those things don't heal. It takes them a while, like a good while, to really get back to 100%.
Because it's two bones and they're separated. I'm not
a
doctor.
It's just a whole bunch of – having had a high ankle sprain, those things are just – they're awful. Because you are not the player that you want to be, but you can still be out there, so to speak. Here's the road that I don't think many went down, and maybe they're scared to go down. In order for Tua to get ready for that game, I had to have injected something in him to play, to kind of ease the pain. If we are trying to get guys away from that, why not let him sit another week so he doesn't have to take that injection? To play throughout a game, to ease the pain.
I understand Nick's statement
I get it.
He looked healthy.
Yeah.
And listen, he did look healthy in the first half. So it didn't look – I get that's part of the equation. Hey, why would you not play your best players at every position?
But
I understand that sentiment, but you got to think bigger than that. If you know you're on the fence to the playoff,
mm-hmm.
you know you're on the edge that you may not get into the playoff. You know this already. Nick, I'm not going to buy for 1 second that you're blind to the situation around you.
Mm-hmm.
You know that you're on the edge of getting into the playoff, and the only way you get into the playoff, again, we assume a win over Mississippi State and Western Carolina. The only way you get into the playoff is if you crush Auburn and you have Tua as your quarterback. Because mm-hmm. if you don't have Tua now, you're done. That's it. You're not getting in. It's as simple as that. And it was a risk-reward decision. He risked it. I didn't see a lot of reward there. But he risked everything because now he's probably not going to get into the playoff because the committee cannot look at Alabama the same way with Tua as they do without him.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, to me, again, it just, you know, you give him another week to fully rest where he doesn't have to play. This game is, you're not in jeopardy of losing this game. We know that. Everybody knows that. You're not in jeopardy of losing this game. This kid is allowed to sit on the sideline, rest. You still dress him just in case something happens to Mac and you need an emergency quarterback. But he is your emergency quarterback. He is not the starter. And then you don't have to, you know, subject to him to, you know, some type of anti-inflam to get him going. You know, aren't we trying to remove guys from this stuff? Well, if that is indeed the case, you don't have to give it to him now because you're not planning on him having to go out there. Because to me, you had to have given him, from my experience, you had to have given him something so he can go out there and play so he didn't feel fully the effects of that ankle. Yep. I mean, but it's
gone now.
I'm not questioning Nick. Only we said that he shouldn't have played. So we're not just, this show is not just getting on a bandwagon with everybody else.
It's not second guessing or blaming or anything.
We said he shouldn't have played. I even said maybe he shouldn't have played against LSU.
Yeah,
because maybe it'll work out better for you, you know? And definitely not this past game. But now they don't have him. I don't see any, under any scenario other than maybe if they beat Auburn by 30 points that they even gets in.
I think everybody has to lose. Like Georgia would have to lose to LSU. Like, you know, Ohio State would have to lose and then lose. And then Penn State would have to, like, I think everybody would have to lose multiple games for them to get in now. And I just, you know, they're a very good football team with Mac Jones. They're an elite football team with Tua. That's it. They're just different. It's just not the same football team. And it's not that complicated to understand. And you know, whether it's Nick's fault or not, 10 years from now, maybe he'll look back on this and go, man, maybe I shouldn't have played him. Who knows? But I also understand where he's coming from in that cut where he just says, listen, why would we not play our best players if they're healthy? And I get that sentiment as well. I just disagree with it. And even though you're the greatest coach of all time, it doesn't mean you're above reproach. It doesn't mean I can't question a decision. That's what we do in Sports Talk Radio. Speaking of the questioning of decisions, big one for tonight, goaltending. What's going on with the Preds? They're back on the ice tonight. We'll get to that when we come back. Morning Drive. Oh, I don't even have words for this.
I was like, are you all right, man?
No, I'm not all right. I'm not all right. Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on Morning Drive.
That's some trippy music right here, man.
Can you pull it down and then push it back up again? Because we're about to hit the chorus and the Mercury part of this. Such a good song. That album, check that out. Sturgill, man, so good.
It seems like some trippy music.
There is no genre. It's rock, it's country, it's just psychedelic, it's funky. Like there's no genre for Sturgill right now. That's what makes him genius. All right, Predators back on the ice tonight. Of course, 7 o'clock puck drop against Winnipeg. Huge divisional game considering how this team played on Saturday evening against Chicago. They will, again, puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, of course, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And listen, you know, Vingan had an excellent column in The Athletic about the issues on defense, trying to pinpoint the issues on defense. And we've seen these issues on as far as allowing high danger chances. Peter LaViolette told us about them early in the season. It was obvious to see, you know, UC Saros didn't exactly get off to a great start, but Pekka was great. And the defense was hanging him out to dry for a while. Mm-hmm. Then it was sort of the penalty kill. Then it was sort of these bizarre, you know, single period issues, whether it was the third period against Calgary, or the second period against Colorado. But Vingan delved into a bunch of sort of advanced sabermetrics for hockey. And I'll try to boil it down for you to quickly understand. And that is that the expected goals allowed versus the actual goals allowed don't match up. Mm-hmm. And the sabermetrics will tell you that the Predators defense is actually playing better, that the Predators defense is better in their own zone, that they're not giving up the same number of high danger chances, and that they are doing a more complete job on their own end of the ice, but that the goaltending is now part of the problem. The penalty kill is part of the problem. I think you have to look at this issue, and Rex Road followed up Adam Vingan's column in The Athletic with sort of a don't panic article, which I agree with. Teams go through these funks and then they come out of it. But what I want to see tonight, again, it's been one thing or the other. Defense, penalty kill, goaltending. Right now it's the goaltending that's costing this team because Pekka gave up a lot of soft goals on Saturday night. Got pulled for the second time in three games. We need to see this team work through all these different issues. It's okay that it's happening now in November. What you don't want to see is a team working through all of these issues in February and March. That's when you don't want to see all this happening.
But isn't this the same thing that we said last year when it came to the power play? That, you know what, they eventually get it right, and, you know, it's better that it's happening now, they work it out now, than heading into the playoffs late in the year on their playoff run. As long as they get it right then they'll be fine. Well, they didn't get it right. And, you know, maybe from a goaltending standpoint, you know, you hope that it gets better. You hope that the defense gets better or the penalty kill gets better. But what if it doesn't? What does that mean for the Nashville Predators? I think it's a bigger problem than the problem that they had last year. Because how many times are you in a power play? Maybe what, two or three times a game?
Yeah, four or five at most. Yeah.
So that it's a part of the game, but it's not this huge part of the game. Well, playing defense and some other things, being in net, that's a huge part of the game.
And 5-on-5.
Exactly. Yeah. And 5-on-5, that's a huge part of the game. Yeah. And if you can't get that straightened out, it will affect you heading toward the end of the season. Right now they sit sixth in the Central. Are they in the playoffs? If the season ended now, are they
in
the playoffs?
They're not in the playoffs. They're sixth place in the division.
Exactly. So this needs to be fixed and fixed quickly, because here's another thing. As the season goes on, what happens? Guys get injured. Guys get nicked up. Guys miss. You got to switch up the lineup. That's every team across the board. They're not immune to injuries. Well, if you're having this defensive problem now, what happens when a few guys go down for a couple of games? Now you've compounded a problem that you haven't fixed, because now you don't have the offensive weapons or weapons period that you rely on. So this is a situation unlike the power play that needs to be fixed. It's not like special teams where you're horrible, you know, on punt return or kickoff return. And as long as you play good defense and good offense, you can overcome that. It's not like that. This is a situation where if the offense is bad or the defense is bad in their case, it's hard to get over that. And if you don't, and as the season goes on, it only gets worse because guys get injured.
Now, the good news is, and Peter Laviolette has sort of talked a little bit about this, and Joe Rexroad put this in his column, which is why I'm with him on there's really no reason to panic about this. Your points about how the power play issue got started last year and how we talked about it in the first half of the season and said, oh, it's not that big. It's got to be bad at the end of the season for it to be an issue. You're totally right. It just continued and just stayed an issue, and it never got fixed. And then Peter Laviolette spent 15 minutes in the offseason trying to describe why the hell it went wrong and the literally dozens of things he tried to do to fix it. Well, power play is not an issue anymore. They went out and got Duchesne. Offense isn't the problem. I do believe that, and Laviolette said this and Rexroad put it in his column, that if you're going to have to fix one of the two, offense or defense, you want to have to try to fix defense.
Yeah.
Because it's about attention to detail. It's about work ethic. It's about, you know, the grind, all this stuff. You trust Pekka and UC Saros to regress to the mean, even if they have a couple of bad stretches like UC did to start the year, or maybe Pekka right now. And this is where I think hockey actually benefits from sabermetrics and analytics more than almost any other sport, because it's very difficult. You could look at a guy who plays a great game, because we talked to Crispy about this on Friday. He knows. I asked Crispy, remember I said, how much analytics do you use? And he's like, he's my buddy who lives next door, Mr. Analytics. I don't know any analytics. I've never met anyone by that name. And he knew at the end of a game whether or not a guy played his butt off or not. And that's all he needed. And I get that angle. But what analytics tells us as analysts is to look at this team and say, all right, why are they giving up 6 goals, 5 goals, 7 goals, 9 goals? Why are they doing this? Well, if they're giving up a boatload of high-danger chances, then it's your defense.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not giving up a bunch of high-danger chances and the goalies are giving up soft goals, by and large, then we know it's a little bit more on the goaltending. If it's clearly on the penalty kill, then it's an obvious answer. you know, Matt Irwin has a terrible turnover. You can't give up odd man rushes like that and just, you know, breakaways. So it's easier, I think, with analytics to help pick apart a problem with a hockey team than it is maybe with football, where it's a little bit more obvious, where you just say, oh, this team can't stop the run, and that's it. So I do believe that, though, that if you have an offensive problem the way this team has sort of felt in the past, you cannot just go fix it. You can't just, hey, attention to detail and bust your butts a little harder on the next shift, and all of a sudden you're going to be a better scoring team. You can only do that with talent. It's like basketball. You have to have dudes that can score. But on defense, it's not that way. In the NHL, you can fix that a little bit easier. And Peter Laviolette basically said that in Joe Rexroad's column. And so I am not worried. I'm not worried today. We have this same conversation again in December and again in January, and it starts to become a major concern.
Yeah, it does. And that's one of the things that when talking with Lavi last week, and I asked him that question, is it better to be struggling defensively as opposed to offensively? Because I think defensively, if you just attention to detail, being responsible, doing the things that we tell you to do, then typically those things get fixed. Offensively, it's a little bit harder to do that, because if you're not a natural scorer, it's hard to kind of fabricate or generate some type of offense. So luckily, it's the defense that is having a problem and not necessarily the offense. It's crazy because Pecorine a few weeks ago was in the top, 10 as far as...
He had the best start in franchise history.
As far as goaltending. Now he's based amongst starters and non-starters. He's 39th in the NHL with an 89% save percentage. Does that tell a whole story for Pekka? No, it doesn't. But I don't think in recent years, that I can remember, and you guys can correct me, I don't think he had this type of drop, at least not in the last couple of years.
And it's all been sort of, it's almost like you have two bad defensive games in the NFL. You can destroy your stats for like an entire, you can play good for 8 weeks, play well for 8 weeks. But if you have two really terrible games and give up 50 points, your entire stats get skewed. And that's sort of the way Pekka's had these two games and three games have sort of
really
skewed his numbers.
Now,
otherwise,
we've seen him play bad in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's
going to be
fine.
But during the regular season, we hadn't seen him drop this far recent years.
The problem is right now that if it's not one thing, it's another thing.
Yeah.
If it's not the defense, then it's the penalty kill. If it's not the penalty kill, it's the goaltending. If it's not the goaltending, it's the defense. Mm-hmm. And you gotta sort of systematically fix all of them. Mm-hmm. And that's the bigger issue, is that it's all of it. That's the issue. If it was just one thing, I'd feel more comfortable with the coaching staff being able to hone in on that and fix it. It has not been. So it's been a little bit of everything, depending on, basically where you're at. All right. Preds back on the ice tonight. Again, 7 o'clock, puck drop against Winnipeg. Tune in right here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Derek Mason, not the guy I work with, but the football coach at Vanderbilt. We are going to get into a discussion about his future when we return. Morning Drive.